a lot of times when you're creating any kind of content or podcast or whatever it is, a lot of people get kind of caught up in the fact they're not sure how to get started. And I always think back to what Miles Davis said to John Coltrane. John turned to him and said to Miles, he says, I don't even know how to start laying down this riff. I don't know when to start. And Miles said to him, just put your saxophone in your mouth and start blowing.
That's pretty much what we do.
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and digital patient engagement strategies for hospitals, healthcare systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into a variety of topics on the digital tools, solutions, strategies, and processes that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information and have fun along the way. And now, here are your hosts, Reed Smith and Chris Boyer.
Welcome to episode 121 of Touchpoint. I am Reed Smith and back after a week off. I'll let Chris do all the heavy lifting last week up in the Windy City. How's it going?
Mm-hmm. Pretty good, Reed. Good to have you back. Nice to hear you on the other side of the microphone there. And good to hear that your voice is coming back too.
A little bit. If you hear some coughing in the background stuff, I apologize now if Chris doesn't get it all edited out.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at the editing, but you never know. So,
oh, man. Well, good. It sounds like last week went well. It was a cool episode. Always great to have folks like Amanda and Jared and Brian and Tim. Anyway, all the different folks on from all those really great companies and smart folks. So anyway, that's the best part as we roll into conference season.
Absolutely, Reed. And you'll also be happy to note that I actually had some really good sit-down conversations with some other smart people there. And that audio will be coming in the future. So stay tuned.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, today we're going to talk a little bit about content creation, and what that may look like for your team if you don't already kind of have a plan in place. Quick plug for the website, touchpoint.health. Be sure to jump out there, check out all the shows, not just ours. Rate, review, subscribe over on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening. And let's jump in and talk about a little content. But before we do, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Using powerful AI-driven algorithms, Loyal's Guide helps patients along every step of their journey, from choosing a doctor and finding the nearest location to signing up for an event or clinical trial. Whether you are using Guide's chatbot, live chat, or the powerful combination of both, Loyal's engaging platform integrates seamlessly into your system, maximizes efficiency, and improves patients' digital experience. To learn more or schedule a demo, visit them online at loyalhealth.com/demo. That is loyalhealth.com/demo.
Well, Reed, last week when I was in Chicago at the conference, at the summit, I sat in on a number of sessions where they were talking about, you know, effective content strategies that they did, various different ones like using data and content. I even sat in on someone we interviewed a couple of weeks ago, Gina Zark with Northwell. But, you know, one of the things that kind of resonated with me as I was sitting there in the audience listening to various different people sharing effective content strategies, content marketing strategies, is today, in today's day and age, most hospitals that I know, big or small, many of them don't have like an official content creation team.
Yeah, I would agree. I think especially we've talked many times about kind of that middle 80%, right? Like throw out the top 10% of hospitals in America and the bottom 10%, more from a size perspective, size of the organization, size of the marketing department, however you want to frame that. But anyway, that middle 80%, I would say no, it's very unlikely or not very common to see a content team. A content person, maybe sometimes like there'll be a writer or somebody like that on staff, but not a team per se.
Maybe that writer is really good at writing press releases, or maybe they're good on social media, and they're kind of tasked by, because of the mere fact that they're good at writing things, that they're pulled into various different other content creation tasks. And sometimes that gets a little confusing. It gets a little bit hard for them because that may not be their core discipline, right? They're not content strategists by nature. They're just really good at creating content for one channel or a particular way. And that's how they got there.
Yeah. And I have seen kind of that scenario, right? Where you've got somebody like at a division level, corporate level, market level, I don't know, however you want to talk about that. And then having people on site, you know, boots on the ground, if you will, that have been trained or capture content in some way. You know, this is typically for social media. You know, they're taking pictures of the NICU reunion or the balloon release or the press conference or, you know, episodic things that are happening on site. And so, you know, that's, I guess, a little bit of a what would be considered a content team, but it's not really their full-time job. It's just, you know, they've been kind of trained up or they're good at it or want to help in that way or, you know, those types of things, which I think is good.
The other thing, too, is that there's sometimes in marketing and particular communications teams, there are people that are on those teams that come from like a journalistic background. So they were a reporter at one point in their lives. Right. Maybe they came from the local newspaper. They just by default, because they had that in their past and maybe they feel that's what their passion is, they tend to seek out the content creation responsibilities, as so to speak, of that marketing or communications team.
Do you think that's more communications related versus marketing? Because I see a fair amount of that as well. But they're typically communicators that were at the TV station, were at the newspaper, you know, were at another organization in town or another health-related organization in town that were writers. It's like they come in on the communication side, so they're not really marketing folks, it doesn't seem like. So when you start talking about content marketing, is that a stretch?
Oh, a total stretch, right? Just because you come from a journalistic background or just because you happen to write good content for social media or what have you, or just because you happen to write doesn't necessarily equate to being a great content strategist. And I'm by the way, I'm not saying this disparagingly of these people. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, you know, the very nature of content marketing and content creation in this day and age, it's radically different. Some of the things that I've noticed is, first of all, it's highly digital. When you're creating content or content marketing effectively, you're more oftentimes than not, you're creating on digital channels. So you have to be really good at writing for a website, writing for a blog, writing for social media, writing for an email. It's kind of like you have multiple digital channels that you have to write for. And each one of those, you may not be effective at overall. Isn't that fair to say?
It's very fair to say. And I think it's a harder hurdle for a lot of folks that do come from that traditional writing PR communications background because they're used to certain ways of writing, to your point. Even the simple things like, and again, I know Twitter has expanded this, but you know, the 140 characters or the, you know what, a headline is actually better if it's only X amount of words or, you know, the whole shorter thing is harder. You know, it's hard to write short effectively.
And moreover, when you look at one of the other things that's a little bit different about content marketing is content marketing has a unique place in the funnel, right? The customer journey. Effective content marketing techniques aren't necessarily the same as writing a great blog post or uncovering a great story. In fact, more times than not, content marketing has multiple touch points, multiple nurturing steps in the process to nurture these people through a content marketing campaign or strategy.
Yeah. And just with the attention span that, you know, is what it is at this point, you know, you're seeing a lot of news outlets. If you look at their updates on social media, specifically Facebook, they're super short. The copy is literally like the one sentence, the one short sentence, and that's it. You know, everybody's staying away from the, you know, having to click the read more or the, you know, the expansion piece of a block of text. And so anyways, it's just interesting to me that, you know, everybody's moved to the image-based, whether it be photography, video, you know, whatever that is. Obviously, that's been driven a lot by Facebook and Instagram and some of those. But creating content is different than it probably was early on, just like marketing's different than it was early on. You know, we talk a lot about billboards and radio and, you know, those types of buys that were historically very effective, and not that they can't be, they can still be very effective. And so can a press release. And so again, it's not a one size fits all or an either or, it's probably a both and at this point, but it is a little bit of a different mindset.
And a little bit later, we have a good interview with Jane Crosby. She's going to talk a little bit about, she works for True North and the way that True North has worked with their clients to really ramp up their content marketing or content creation capabilities. But I thought it might be good for us, Reid, to talk a little bit about how organizations that may not have an official formal content team or content structure, you know, with a content strategist and writers, et cetera, how they could create an effective content marketing approach that could scale with them. I found an article that it's a couple of years old, but it still is relevant. And it's called How to Create a Content Marketing Team That Scales. And I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things that they discuss there, because I think it's good for our audience to maybe hear the approach that they're laying out, because it resonates with, at least when I read it, it resonated with some of the challenges I face within my organization.
Yeah, it is. It's really good. And they start off this article by talking a lot about something that it kind of gave me pause a little bit, quite honestly, when I first read it. But they talk about that most of the problems, you know, at least we like to blame most of the problems due to a lack of resources. And that's, I guess, probably true, at least for a lot of folks. But they argue that more often than not, it's more of an issue of focus. We're quick to say, well, we don't have enough people or enough money or enough time or, you know, whatever it is, which I guess the time part could relate to the focus piece. And they give a couple of examples of that. You know, they talk about it's the lack of expertise that could have turned a basic blog post into a cornerstone piece of content, for example.
Or looking at your social strategy and fine-tuning it to align with a content marketing approach, not just doing social like it was 3-4 years ago, really adjusting it to support the current needs of potential customers that are using social as a way to engage with your health system.
And even, you know, the analytics that go underanalyzed, or as we've all seen, they're just not even set up. You know, they've plugged in the little unique code from their Google Analytics account, you know, so you have some analytics like on a website, for example. But whether it's those analytics, web analytics or social analytics or, you know, listening, you know, online monitoring, things like that, they may or may not be, you know, they're usable, but are they optimized? Probably not. Or at least maybe they were at one time, and it's kind of a rinse and repeat process. It's not like you can just walk away. And then certainly the person doing the analysis on this stuff, you know, we don't have a lot of that data scientists sitting around, right?
So, right. It's usually a web administrator or a person who's looking at Google Analytics and saying, well, time on page is low, so therefore it doesn't work, without really understanding the larger schematic of the analytics. I think the other thing that really comes up a lot, and we hear this when we hear lack of resources, a lot of times it could be process inefficiency. I remember recently auditing the process that it takes for us to create a blog post, which features a patient testimonial and a physician maybe commenting about a particular service, right? Or what have you. Just doing a very simple step-by-step audit of the process to develop that, I counted at least 7, up to 10 potential reviews and rewrites of one blog post. Imagine that, right? A blog post is what, like 400, 600 words maybe? And yet it's being reviewed 7 to 10 times. No wonder it, you know, that it feels like we don't have enough resources to create this content. The way we do our process may be inefficient.
Again, it's the path of least resistance. You know, we're forging down paths typically that it makes sense to us. We're not using a lot of insider analysis in a lot of cases. We're just, you know, trying to move through the day, move to the next meeting, things like that. And so if you don't have the right people in place, which is kind of what some of this article is getting into, you know, as far as, you know, how do you build an effective team? But if you don't have the right people in place, it's really hard to understand if you're making headway towards some of these goals.
Yeah, it's interesting. The author of this article, and we'll link to it in the show notes, says one of the problems he consistently sees with content marketing teams is what he calls checklist hiring. You need a social media manager, so that's what you hire for. Yeah. You need a writer, so you hire a writer. And the author puts forth, he says, the smartest approach to building a content marketing team is looking a little bit more holistically, looking at the machine as a whole, and then analyzing how each part contributes to it. That really gives you a focus where you can actually identify where you can improve. Strategy, content, distribution, all of those things are kind of, you have to look at in order to build the right team.
That's interesting, right? Because again, the knee-jerk reaction is like, we need more content. We got to find somebody that can write. And maybe that is what you need. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But we almost need to start from the other end, which is the analysis side of the equation, to understand personas and who's coming here and what they want, what they need, you know, how does that align with business goals, things like that, right? To try to put this plan in place that then someone can manage.
It's so funny how oftentimes we go back to understanding your customer and understanding their needs. I mean, that seems like always square one, and then identifying where your gaps are.
All right. Well, we're going to come back after this quick break with some tips and kind of go from there. So let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Are you struggling with online reputation management? Binary Health Analytics provides healthcare systems, hospitals, and physician practices a complete view into managing patient feedback from online ratings and reviews and especially surveys. It continuously mines feedback for sediment, uncovering timely and actionable insights. Its management tools help turn these insights into an opportunity to increase patient engagement, manage reputation, and improve patient experience. To learn more about Binary Health Analytics, visit Binary Fountain online at binaryfountain.com. That is binaryfountain.com.
Why don't we talk through a little bit about some of the roles that they believe are an effective content marketing team? When you're crafting your content strategy, one of the first persons they suggest to have on your team is a marketing leader. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that person is a writer or a social media expert or whatever. This is a person who really understands your marketing goals and understands those personas, understands what we're trying to accomplish, what's the overall goal of the strategy or what have you.
I worry a little bit about just the idea that, you know, how many hours are there in a day? I mean, realistically, it's not like, you know, they reference in here a chief content officer. Well, that's not going to happen. Again, in that 80% sweet spot, that's not going to happen. But yes, I mean, the marketing leader does make sense because somebody has to lead the direction, right? You know, they then talk about the marketing manager. And this is the person actually pushing and pulling and managing, right? Pushing, pulling levers and that kind of thing. In more of a project management role, I would assume.
A little bit more than that, though, because they can guide the content strategy. So what that means is they're keeping track of the bigger picture, right? They're tracking the entire campaign or the entire strategy, and they're able to identify with the help of a supportive team where there might be gaps, where there might be ways that you can optimize and change things. They're also keeping on track of what the competitors are doing. So obviously they manage it too, right? They make sure that everything gets executed the right way and they're keeping track of everything. But really their job is sort of like the quarterback. So if you think of the marketing leaders like the coach, they're the quarterback of the content strategy.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because in this article, they do give kind of a list of resources, which is pretty interesting. You know, it's things like Basecamp and Percolate and, you know, resources like the American Marketing Association or HubSpot, you know, et cetera. So it's kind of funny to see, you know, what types of support or recommendations they have for people in these different roles. The next one is the SEO analytics expert, which makes a lot of sense. Again, I think this is probably one of the more critical hires, not just in content, but just in general.
Oh, gosh, yeah. This person is sort of like your analyst, and they're looking at how to attract people using good SEO techniques, right? How to bring them in. And then once they interact with your digital content, how effective they are. I think it's a little bit weird that they start with SEO because it's really SEO slash analytics. And oftentimes in the content marketing strategies I have been working on, email is a big part of this. So SEO is not really a critical part of that, but the analytics part is critical. Regardless, they have to understand how the content's performing and provide those data-driven insights to the marketing team about how that content campaign is working. Then they actually call someone the managing editor. This is where the person, and some of these roles can be combined together, but they say the managing editor oversees all content and manages the calendar, the volume, the cadence, and they're kind of keeping track of everything that's going on in other channels as well. And I think that's an important role to have too, because you don't want to have content on top of each other, and we need to be efficient with the work that we do.
Do you think these are individual roles in a hospital? Can we get away with combining some of this stuff? I mean, I guess we're gonna have to, right? I mean, it's not like you have a huge choice, but like managing editor, you know, that's going to be, you know, the director of digital or something like that in a lot of cases, you know, is going to have to do that. Keep up with the editorial calendar, the scheduling, task management, you know, that kind of thing, or some sort of a digital strategist maybe. The analytics role is maybe that is a role, but it's going to span more than just content, right? It's going to be across all efforts.
Okay, so that's about strategy, right? That's just setting up the strategy. And I think you're right, Reed. Those are combined roles. Often it's like one marketing manager, marketing director, whatever, that's kind of like leading a lot of that with an analyst. But then when you get into content creation, which is also, I mean, that's the second step, right? Creating the content. There are four distinct roles that this person calls out as well. The first is obviously the subject expert, right? So that's your doctor. That's maybe your patient. That is the person who knows the content in and out. They don't have to be a writer per se, but they have to know the content and how that content is valuable to the reader.
And this is where we get into this idea of like the marketing department should quit writing everything. This is where you get into, too, where you got the clinical folks. Like that's who people want to hear from, right? An athletic trainer, a dietitian, physician, nurse, et cetera. But those are the subject matter experts in our world.
Related to that, though, is an editor. And so now we use this term a lot, editor. What do you think an editor means in this particular case?
Everyone's an editor.
Exactly.
Everybody loves to chime in with their two cents. I think in the truest sense, or what we would need it to be, is shaping it to the audience. So they're taking what the subject matter expert has to say or provide from content, you know, whether that's written or audio, video, whatever it is, and they're shaping that to best perform for an audience, for a channel, at least in my mind.
Right. And also channeling it around your tone and your voice of your organization. So it sounds like it's coming from you. I have run into a lot of great subject matter experts that can write their own content. And the role of the editor in that case is to just make sure it sounds like it's coming from your organization and it doesn't have sort of that, the tone and the voice of that expert. Another role in the content creation, and this is one that a lot of people don't think about, is a designer. Mm. A designer to create infographics, interactives, any kind of visual aspects or design aspects, frankly, to support that content effort. I think that's a critical piece that we overlook a lot.
I think so. Because immediately when you say designer, everybody thinks graphic designer. That's somebody in the, you know, creative director, you know, are they creating collateral or ads or, you know, that type of a thing.
In the interview, you'll hear Jane talk a lot about infographics as being an important way to bridge the gap between written content and visual content, which is, that's the way social is going. Infographics are sort of the thing that, I mean, it's funny to say, and I've seen a lot of bad ones, but it is important to have infographics as part of your content marketing efforts.
Absolutely.
The last role, so to speak, and again, this could all be one or two people or whatever, is a good writer. Now, that's usually what we think about when we think about a content creator, right, as a writer. But in this particular case, the writer, it's the person who actually can write. It could maybe do a good interview with an expert. It could actually be someone that can actually put the words together and ideally write from different modalities, like we talked about earlier, social media versus a blog post versus a website, you know, all the different things that you can write. That's an important role in the content creation process.
Again, it's the one closest to what we think of when we think of these types of things, because it seems the meatiest, right?
It does seem the meatiest, and it seems like that's really all where content flows. But again, they're a critical role, but there's so many other people in the content creation effort. The last thing that this article talks about is best ways to distribute content. We know that it's that classic, you know, Field of Dreams thing, right? You don't just build a blog post and they'll come. You have to create a way where you can get that content out to people to help with the content marketing effort.
Yeah, the first one listed here is something kind of interesting that we don't have any of these, at least not by this name. But as a distribution strategist, I can just imagine that conversation around trying to secure an FTE for a distribution strategist role. You're really like, what are you talking about? Anyway, but again, it's, you know, how do we get this thing out? It's probably what used to be called a publisher to some degree or something like that. Maybe that's what you should call it. But yeah, a distribution strategist.
The author describes it this way: as someone in this role has contacts at major publications, just knows what type of content is going to land with publishers, forms smart relationships with other brands, and knows how to strategize earned and paid placement. So translating that for hospitals, contacts within major publications, that sounds like a PR function.
A lot of it does.
So your communications team, knowing when your content is going to land, that could be a person working on your social media accounts because they know what the audience, what they kind of like. It could also be a digital marketing expert who knows what kind of content works well on blogs versus websites, that sort of thing. And then the last thing that they just kind of throw it in there and knows how to strategize earned and paid placements. So then you also have someone that's really good at placing advertising and knowing where that advertising will resonate with this content marketing effort. So this one role as distribution strategist is kind of spread among multiple people within the normal hospital marketing communications team.
Secondly, they outline an email marketer, which I think everybody probably at least has some preconceived ideas of what that would be. I don't know that there are a lot of those. Now, people do email marketing, but I don't know that people will have an email marketer on staff in most cases. But I'll tell you what, it's a pretty effective medium these days and maybe something worth looking into. I don't know that that's truly a full FTE for most folks, but I think could be something that really needs to be focused on, certainly.
I think every marketing person should be a good email marketer in this day and age. And I'm feeling that more and more, learning the best practices around, how to write effective subject lines and A/B testing and how call to actions work within an email. But even if you don't have a person that's designated to email marketing, you need to have someone that is familiar with that platform. In my organization, I brought in an expert to manage our CRM efforts. And she just happens to also have very effective email marketing capabilities, which makes sense because our CRM has a marketing automation tool aligned with it. In effect, what she's become now is sort of the expert, and her role is teaching the marketing managers to become very effective with the email medium.
That's very, very cool. Now, that probably could be somewhat combined with what they outline next, which is a social media expert. We do still see some social media roles. We do, right? People still have social media, folks.
Yeah.
Please do not call yourself like a guru or a ninja, something ridiculous like that. Immediately, I'm going to, anyway. But that social media role probably needs to be coupled with some of these other things, at least in my mind, like email marketing, for example. Those could be a natural fit. Even some of those distribution roles that were outlined, maybe not the earned media side of the equation, but some of the other pieces, especially around social, for example, that could kind of become a role, at least initially. Then maybe you get to a point that you need some other folks there.
Okay, so this is the part of the episode where I'm going to go on a little bit of a side rant. Maybe we need to insert some sound effect music for Chris's side rant.
I'm not a crook.
But my side rant is this, is that a lot of times people that are in the role of a social media strategist within an organization, they tend to think they do all of these things that we listed, all of these roles, and they tend to think they do it very effectively because they've been doing this to a certain extent on their social platforms and their social channels. They've been everything from writer, producer, editor, tracking down images, planning out the strategies, etc. But what's happened is that the modern social media person, because they do so many things within an organization, they get themselves into a little bit of a silo. And quite frankly, they spread themselves a little bit too thin. So they're not effective at everything, right? They're the jack of all trades, but master of none. And so if you have a social media person on your team, don't default to them being your content strategist or the person in charge of your content marketing. Even though they may have dabbled in a little bit of all of this, they're not necessarily the right people. Okay, end rant.
I agree. Even if you are good at all of these things individually, you can't do it all at once. There's not enough hours in the day. That's a really good point. All right, great discussion on how to kind of structure a team and what some of those roles may look like, and then just some side thoughts and rants along the way. Let's take a break right here and jump over to an interview, a conversation that I had recently with Jane Crosby over at True North. Got some great tips around content creation, and then we'll be back to wrap up the show.
At HealthGrades, better health gets a head start. They help millions of consumers each month to find and schedule appointments with their provider of choice. With their scheduling solutions and advanced analytics applications, they partner with more than 500 hospitals across the country to cultivate new patient relationships, improve patient access, and build customer loyalty. To learn more, visit them online at healthgrades.com. That is healthgrades.com.
Welcome back to the Ask the Expert portion of the podcast. And today I am fortunate to be joined by Jane Crosby, who is with True North Customs as their regional VP of business development. And Jane and I have known each other for a few years now. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Yeah, I'm excited about it, Reed, and thanks for having me.
Before we kind of jump in, maybe give just a little thumbnail sketch of who True North is, because I think that's relevant to what we're going to talk about. And then maybe a little bit of your background.
True North Custom has been a healthcare marketing partner for about 30 years now. A lot of healthcare marketers remember us for our print publications, but today we really think about content as a holistic strategy, both through print and digital channels to support marketing technology platforms, grow service line revenues by complementing existing campaigns or managing them ourselves, and of course, engaging consumers, physicians, potential donors, and more with those print publications and blog and social media content strategies on the front end.
The reason I wanted you to give the background of True North is because you guys have been around for a long time, predating pretty much all the technology that we know today, you know, kind of a thing. And so you talked about that, right? Like people know you in a lot of cases, especially if they haven't engaged with you guys in some years or haven't been paying attention very closely. They associate probably you guys and some others with more of that print or traditional piece of content or publication, which there's still a place for that. And that's probably a topic for another day. When we start thinking about the maximizing the value of technology as it relates to that content, because I think that's something you guys have done for a long time, which is content creation, right?
Yeah.
Where is technology starting to kind of intersect with, you know, what historically has been considered just a content play?
As we've evolved our business, one area that really started our evolution towards the digital space was print publications that clients were coming to us and saying, you know, they were ready to move into a digital space and they didn't know if that print publication had a space. So really easily allowing them to take that content and let it live online as well, maybe scaling back the circulation as we do that, was a great way for us to continue to produce great publications, but complement them with that blog environment as well as the social media teaser copy, so that really we're just extending the reach and allowing our clients to use that content across multiple channels. Today, consumers are constantly searching for health information online. Rock Health just produced a study showing that the adoption of digital health tools is going to be most prominent for consumers in the online health information area, more so than wearables and online provider reviews and other technology platforms that our clients are probably investing in today or consumers are investing in themselves. So we've seen it become increasingly important to have that content online. And as we've grown, we've started to produce that website content itself, things uniquely related to services, conditions, and treatments, so that as consumers search for that information, they're finding it on our clients' websites and converting as our clients want them to through various channels and along different points along that decision-making journey.
Again, still at the center of all of this, you can have all the bells and whistles and, you know, we talk about this idea of chasing the shiny object. You know, we just throw more technology at things. But content still is a real struggle for most. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's very true. And we see that all the time. Our clients are investing in technology platforms and either they don't renew those platforms or they just don't ever see the value because they're not doing anything with them. For that website or that HRA or whatever the investment might be, for it to be valuable, there has to be good information there and actionable takeaways for the consumer, or it's never going to give you an ROI. I think content creation is genuinely just really hard though. An Adobe survey recently outlined that to create one short form piece of content or an ad typically takes about 17 hours. And then on the long form side, it's closer to 27, which is a lot. You know, if you had a full-time employee working 40 hours a week, that's essentially less than two long form pieces of content, which is a very expensive piece of content. So I think that our clients are just more and more challenged to create it. And, you know, as you guys know, healthcare marketers kind of live in silos. So I think what's created in one area is very rarely being utilized in others when it definitely should be. Content can be used across multiple channels and for different purposes by just tweaking it a little bit, maybe turning an article into an infographic, adding some video components. So that content strategy is really, really important to make sure that we're pushing content out to as many consumers when we invest the time to create it in the first place.
Why do you think it takes so long? I mean, 17 hours for a short form piece of content. Where's the hang up, do you think?
I think for healthcare in particular, it's the importance of making sure that piece of content is accurate and medically verified. And I think our clients really struggle with that. I think also understanding what to write and how to do it in a way that's effective. You know, for a lot of people, they're not necessarily hired by a health system to just write content. We certainly have some clients who have those people on staff, but I think it is a rare organization that has writers and designers dedicated to producing engaging content. So it's really hard for people when it's not necessarily within their scope to sit down and write a blog post and do it really well, or write a page of service line copy for a site and make sure that all of that information is accurate for the consumer.
That's interesting. I guess the medical content, you know, certainly not that we're giving health advice, but it still has to be vetted to some degree. And because at best, probably most organizations could have one writer, maybe. Maybe it's part of an FTE's role or something like that. And so really just doing the math, that's not a lot of content each month.
It's really not. You know, like the Cleveland Clinic does a great job with their content marketing. 99% of health systems do not have the resources to do what they're doing and produce a substantial volume of content. And I think it's hard to find the help to write it too. I had one client tell me that when they look for content, they're typically finding agencies who content creation isn't their focus. So it is hard to get them to consistently produce good content, especially if they were to ask for it to not be tied to a campaign or a larger brand relaunch or something like that. And then on the other extreme, you have freelance shops or just individual freelancers who it's really hard to get commitments from. And when you're managing multiple, then the tone and the voice and style is pretty inconsistent. So finding that middle ground of a partner who can help with it consistently and in a cost-effective and content-only focus is challenging. And it's even more challenging to find a great writer or designer who wants to work for a health system rather than freelance on their own time.
It's funny, you mentioned the Cleveland Clinic, and I've thought for years that you know, to your point, that they do a really nice job, and specifically as it relates to social media, and you know, most visible there obviously is Facebook in most cases, and both visible just from the sheer number of people that see it, but also visual, i.e. the graphics and some of those types of things. But whether it's them or anybody else, when you're looking at social, and that is such a huge piece of people's content strategy, what are they doing well, or what are people doing well to really make that content work?
You know, when we think about our top of funnel content strategies, the health and wellness content that's really designed to raise awareness around things like primary care and ER services, just building brand and trust with the consumers, we do think of it as social first. If people aren't engaging with that content on social media, you're probably not going to get much traffic to your blog. And I think the Cleveland Clinic does a great job of stepping away from the status quo. You know, they're not just doing healthy recipes and five tips to avoid mosquito bites in the summer, or, you know, the typical things that you see season in and season out from health systems. They're getting a little bit edgy with some of their content. And I think you really do need to stand out to capture attention today, because we are reaching a point, or going to reach a point, of content saturation in the market. And consumers have so much access to health information, or really any type of information from a content perspective.
So being, you know, consumer centric is still the name of the game. You know, it's not that the mosquito bites or it's time to get a flu shot or things like that are not useful, but you've got to supplement to some degree with things that aren't just, hey, go do this, or hey, come to my event.
Yeah, that's exactly it. They can't all be tied to a call to action for health system revenue. And I think even when you are doing the mosquito bites, the summer safety, firework safety, that kind of content, having a headline that pops, having some kind of spin on it that's a little bit different that somebody else didn't produce last summer is going to be important. And I think that's the only way that our clients are going to stand out. And then the images as well, infographics, I think are a great way to capture attention. And typically they do have a really strong takeaway for the consumer. And we see those being one of the more valuable pieces of content, because it really is, you know, how do you understand when you need this type of care, or when you need to start thinking about weight loss options, rather than a strong health system call to action. I really do see those as consumer centric, and the design is so fun and engaging that they can be used via a lot of different channels and for different campaigns too.
So you mentioned a few minutes ago about, you know, kind of that move towards a little bit edgier content. What does that really mean? And is that something that we can do in healthcare very well? I mean, we're not very good at it in healthcare just because we haven't been allowed to, probably. But are you guys seeing more of that?
We're seeing a little bit. You know, it's funny, I heard Amanda Todorovich from Cleveland Clinic speak at a conference about this article that her team had written that had the word vagina in the title, and her health system leadership hated it. They did not like that piece of content, but it performed really, really well. I think she said that either for the month or for the year, that specific piece was their top performing piece of content. So it definitely depends on the organization, but I think you can step away a little bit and start to push the envelope when you think about social media and some of those more top of funnel channels. I do think that once people are thinking about making appointments, or they are making appointments, searching for provider reviews and listing, certainly be more conservative. But if you're going to have fun with content, definitely the blog and social media is the place to do it.
Well, and typically those people, again, from an awareness standpoint, are probably not looking for that call to action. You don't have to try quite as hard if people are trying to find you, right?
Exactly.
But we're trying to put content in front of people not looking for us in a lot of cases. So then that's an interesting thought process. And as you think about social related to, or along with, you know, your other channels, I think one thing that we did for the longest time, like way back in the day, it was like, we'll just tie our Twitter account to our Facebook page. And you know what I mean? Like, we tried to automate all this stuff because we were just pushing the same thing across the board to all the channels. Are people still doing that? Have we evolved out of that?
I think we're starting to evolve. You know, it definitely depends on the health system, but I do think that more and more of the clients that we work with are thinking about each of their social channels in particular differently. Twitter and Facebook are a very different type of engagement platform. Twitter is great for updates, and maybe you're at an event and had an awesome keynote speaker and you're sharing a quote or sharing a key takeaway. I see that as a great Twitter piece versus the social content that is a little bit more around what we had just talked about with the seasonal tips and tricks and health and wellness content. I think once we think about lower in the funnel, our channels change as well. So, you know, the social media work and that blog content is very much a learning stage and discovery. People are just starting to think about their health. Or maybe they're not, and they just see the content and happen to engage with it. Versus as we get down towards the action and research level for consumers, where they do need information about this condition that they've been diagnosed with. Maybe they took an HRA and they were told they were at high risk for heart disease, delivering them content around what that means so that when they start to search for that information and search for a provider, you're there and guiding them towards a goal conversion is really important. And a clear and concise pathway for that, I think, is really important for our health systems to invest in as they build out the content for their websites.
You know, I worry a little bit about just content, you know, website content versus more of this dynamic content, whether it's in social or blogs or even video or whatever it is, of, you know, the time we're spending on one versus the other. And I don't want to downplay the importance of the website, but I'm just wondering if we're getting to a place at some point where AI and some of the machine learning based technologies are going to serve what would be the traditional website a little more effectively than content is going to be. And the content's going to live on these shared or third party sites. And then, you know, bringing you back to more of a, you know, decision based AI, even in-person decision tree.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think that website content is going to become much more simplified. It's not going to be necessarily a one-stop shop for all things health content related. I think more and more we're going to see health systems transition to a place of outlining the conditions that they treat and offering their service recommendations for how to treat that. I think we're seeing that more and more. I had one client tell me that they recently relaunched their website, and through the content strategy portion of that process, they went from roughly 12,000 pages to about 2,500 pages of content on their site. Which is crazy. I think what clients are doing is a doctor tells them that they need content for this innovative new treatment that they're offering. So they just add another page to the website that outlines that treatment, when really that could live as a couple of sentences within the conditions page for what it's treating. So I think we're going to see that more and more, that our clients will scale back and make a much more streamlined taxonomy and structure for what their site looks like and how it functions.
Well, what, you know, people that are listening and, you know, are thinking about, man, you know, some of these metrics, like it's, you know, taking this long to create content, some of that kind of stuff. And, you know, am I best using, you know, certain platforms for certain audiences in the most effective way? Is it, you have any tips or advice, you know, things people can kind of go do today?
Yeah, if I had one tip for any listeners today, it would be to go back to your office and analyze all of the content that you have today, things that have been created over the last 12 months, and really understand whether or not you got the most bang for your buck with that piece. Did you use it just on the blog and not promote it on social media? Did you use it in a service line campaign, promote it from the website service line page? There's a lot you can do with each piece of content. And even if you missed the boat 12 months ago when it was created, there's probably a way to go back, edit that, optimize it, and reuse it again. So really go back, understand what you're creating and how you can get more mileage out of what you're doing today.
Almost like metrics tied to pieces of content, not executions of the content. So you could kind of, I guess, maybe aggregate all of that, you know, around particular pieces of content and see what's performing well and what may still have some life in it. So that's cool. I like that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one thing that we do for a number of clients is when we think about blog strategies, once articles either stop getting traffic, or if we're going into an existing blog and pieces of content haven't been touched in over a year, we'll either rewrite it or just get rid of it altogether. And I think the goal eventually is that your content doesn't necessarily die over time. It continues to evolve so that it's always getting traffic.
Well, very cool. Well, thanks for coming on for a few minutes. If people want to connect with you online, ask you more questions, that kind of thing, what's the best way for people to track you down?
Yeah, so email is great. It's jcrosby, C-R-O-S-B-Y, at truenorthcustom.com. Or LinkedIn works great too. It's just Jane Crosby.
Awesome. And we'll be sure to put those links in the show notes as well. But Jane, thanks for coming on for a few minutes and chatting about content. Look forward to having you guys back on in the future.
Yeah, thanks, Reed. It was great to be here. I really appreciate your time and look forward to hearing the episode.
Hi, this is Bobby Ratu, storyteller. I would like to invite you to check out my show called Intersection Podcast, a collection of stories involving healthcare, public policy, and social issues. Intersection is an opportunity to recontextualize stories into a broader viewpoint, breaking away from a short tweet, social media video, a status update, and diving further into longer-form conversations surrounding great storytelling. Search for Intersection Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or go to intersectionpodcast.com to subscribe. I hope you'll join us.
All right, Reed. Well, that was a great conversation with Jane, and I had a chance to connect with her, too, when I was in Chicago. She's got some great ideas, and I love how she shared all these different examples of how she works with clients who are, you know, potentially struggling and pulling their content together in an effective way. Good job talking to her.
Absolutely. Always a fun conversation with Jane. All right. Well, let's cover a couple of things, and then we'll get to recommendations. Again, rate, review, subscribe wherever you listen. Touchpoint.health is the website. And we've got a couple of conferences coming up. You've got one this summer, right?
That's right. I got one that begins on July 30th and ends on August 1st in Chicago. It's called the Strategic Marketing for Healthcare Conference. The day I'm speaking is actually August 1st, and I will be speaking about how to map digital to your content strategy. So if you're in Chicago, come check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes and if you want to go check out that conference.
Very cool. Very cool. Shortly after that, September 8th through the 11th in Nashville, Tennessee, is the annual Shishmed Connections Conference. So Shishmed Connections 2019, according to their website here, is only 77 days and 8 hours away. So be sure to register for that. But anyway, it's going to be in Nashville this year, which is a great city. October 22nd and 23rd in beautiful Rochester, Minnesota, will be the 2019 Mayo Clinic Social Media Network Annual Conference that Chris and I have been involved with for years. And so we'll be, you're already there. I'll be coming your direction for all practical purposes, I guess. You're just down the road. So anyway, we'll be in Rochester, Minnesota in late October.
And shortly thereafter, the Healthcare Internet Conference. I think both of us will be there. That's November 4th through the 6th. And that's in Orlando, Florida. I'm going to be speaking there, Reed, with someone from the Brent Group. We're going to be talking about using a content strategy to define your technology needs, your digital technology needs. So looking forward to that one.
Very cool. Again, all these dates, a little bit about the conference, the links to them, all that kind of good stuff, you can find that on our weekly newsletter that comes out every Monday, unless it's a holiday. It will come out every Monday, and you can sign up for that on the website. It's the TPS report, aggregated news from around the industry, links to some of those articles you might find interesting. And anyway, it's got kind of the upcoming conferences we'll be attending in case you want to connect in person. So very cool. All right. Well, before we get out of here, maybe a couple of recommendations. What are you recommending this week?
Reed, I got turned on to this by our good friend Andy Chang.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We were hanging out after hours at the conference this last week, and we were listening to some music off of someone's iPhone. And we're trying to figure out ways that we can amplify it. And he says, we should all download the app called Amp Me. Have you heard about this app, Amp Me?
No,
Amp Me is an app that will allow you to sync your iPhone with friends and basically create a private and portable sound system. So basically, wow, imagine cool. You're at a party and all your friends have Amp Me. What you could do is be the DJ and you can connect with them through Bluetooth, you know, and then basically broadcast some music from your phone to all these other people's phones. And in effect, you're creating a party in your pocket and your friends' pockets.
Nice. That's very cool. I think of a lot of use cases for that. So I am going to recommend a podcast, another podcast. Did you ever listen to Missing Richard Simmons?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I love that one.
Yeah. So that was a good one. That's not the recommendation, but if you haven't listened to that one, that's a good one. You should go listen to it. But anyway, it was hosted by a guy named Dan Taberski. Well, he has a new one that's out called Running from Cops. And it's an investigation of cops, the longest running reality TV show in history and its cultural impact on policing in America. So it's a podcast about the show Cops. Now, they also get into Live PD, which, have you seen Live PD? You know what I'm talking about?
I have. Okay. I have.
So it's really fascinating, though, and I won't spoil it, but it's all six episodes are out right now, and you can go listen to them wherever you get your podcast. But anyway, it's called Running from Cops, and it's really good. It's really interesting.
I just subscribed to it.
It's good stuff.
I'm going to love that show. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yes,
that's
good stuff.
Awesome.
Good stuff. All right. Well, thanks. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. That is still the best way that other people can find out about us and that we can continue doing this. Also, be sure to visit our sponsors, whether you heard them here on the show or found them on the website. Let them know that you got there because of the fine folks over at Touchpoint Media. Until next week, for Chris Boyer, I'm Reed Smith, and we'll see you next time. This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.